This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at Wednesday's headlines, and the dust has settled on the most competitive primary day of the 2010 midterm election season. Among the marquee matchups was the runoff for the Democratic Senate nomination in the state of Arkansas. Blanche Lincoln had failed to win a majority of the vote last month, and she was actually favored to lose the nomination for a third term to Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter. But, surprise, surprise, when the votes were counted, it was Lincoln who came out on top, and she was clearly relieved.
We have made our mark, and we have shown the rest of this country that we, each of us, as Arkansans and Americans, have a say. From that privilege and that honor of casting our vote, we have a say in what this country is going to be and the direction that we are going to take it.
Not only was the runoff a defeat for Lieutenant Governor Halter, it was also a major defeat for organized labor, which had poured some $10 million into the race on his behalf. A loss for big labor to the extent that the White House sending out a public statement on Wednesday morning saying that the big labor movement had wasted that money on that Senate campaign. Other major Senate primaries on the ballot Tuesday included the one out in California. As expected, a high-dollar affair on the Republican side for the right to take on three-term Senator Barbara Boxer in the fall. In the end, it was former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina easily winning the nomination over former Congressman Tom Campbell and State Assemblyman Chuck DeVore. In her comments to her supporters following the election returns, Ms. Fiorina says that it's clear that people of all political stripes are frustrated right now.
Democrats, Republicans, Tea Partiers, independents, conservatives, moderates, and believers in the radical idea that is America, we all belong to one party this year, the Had Enough Party.
Another major marquee event on the primary schedule yesterday was the Nevada Republican Senate primary, because the winner was to take on Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, one of the most powerful men in Washington, but also one of the most politically vulnerable. His approval ratings in his home state are in the tank. In the end, it was the outsider who ended up winning, Tea Party favorite Sharon Angle, a member of the state legislature. She defeated former state party chairwoman Sue Loudon, as well as Las Vegas businessman Danny Tarkanian, who was a guest of ours last week. In the end, it wasn't even close, a 14-point win for Angle. Also big winners on Tuesday, Meg Whitman, the former eBay CEO, easily winning the GOP nomination for governor of California. She'll take on former Democratic Governor Jerry Brown in November. And Nikki Haley, the state assemblywoman in South Carolina, nearly getting a majority of the vote against three opponents. She will face a runoff in 2 weeks against South Carolina Congressman Gresham Barrett, but Haley also a Tea Party favorite. You may have noticed a theme so far. All the big winners, Republican or Democrat, female, a big night for the women. For full analysis on that, check out my interview with Tennessee Congressman Marsha Blackburn, and she'll explain why she believes women are making such a surge this year, particularly on the Republican side of the aisle. With the Sharon Angle victory out in Nevada, some, especially on the Democratic side, believe that that actually injects some life into the political future of Harry Reid. Is that true? Have Republicans handed Reid his weakest possible opponent? Or is there a titanic political shift in this country that wants those with strong conservative values to be representing them in Washington? For more on that, check out my interview with Peter Ferrara of the American Civil Rights Union. Both of those interviews found at worldnetdaily.com or dateline.radioamerica.org. Well, those aligned with the political establishment don't seem to be doing very well this year. That includes Congressman Bob Inglis in the state of South Carolina. He did survive for a runoff on June 22nd, but he was soundly defeated on Tuesday night by another Tea Party favorite candidate, and Bob Inglis could be in big trouble and could be the latest incumbent voted out in just a couple of weeks. However, it's a much different story in Iowa's gubernatorial primary on the Republican side. Long ago, Terry Branstad was a four-term Republican governor. He easily won nomination to get his old job back. He'll take on Chet Colver, the Democratic governor, who is facing a very difficult economy and very low approval ratings right about now. In other news today, President Obama focusing on Iran today as the United Nations Security Council approved the latest round of sanctions, which the president says are the toughest yet. The president, in talking about the situation with the Iranian nuclear program following the vote by the UN Security Council, says that Iran has clearly violated international law.
Iran concealed a nuclear enrichment facility in Qom that raised serious questions about the nature of its program. Iran further violated its own obligations under UN Security Council resolutions to suspend uranium enrichment. Instead, they're enriching up to 20%. It has failed to comply fully with IAEA's requirements. Indeed, Iran is the only NPT signatory in the world, the only one, that cannot convince the IAEA that its nuclear program is intended for peaceful purposes.
Obama says as a result of that Iranian noncompliance, the UN Security Council has passed tough sanctions, tougher than any ever passed against the regime.
This resolution will put in place the toughest sanctions ever faced by the Iranian government. And it sends an unmistakable message about the international community's commitment to stopping the spread of nuclear weapons.
So what exactly are the new sanctions?
These are the most comprehensive sanctions that the Iranian government has faced. They will impose restrictions on Iran's nuclear activities, its ballistic missile program, and for the first time, its conventional military. They will put a new framework in place to stop Iranian smuggling and crack down on Iranian banks and financial transactions.
The president says he has no illusions about Iran suddenly complying and getting in step with international regulations, but he says a little more pressure could end up going a long way eventually.
We know that the Iranian government will not change its behavior overnight, but today's vote demonstrates the growing costs that will come with Iranian intransigence.
Of course, President Obama also continues to focus on the ongoing disaster in the Gulf of Mexico as the oil from that ruptured well from April 20th continues to spew into the Gulf of Mexico. The president's next trip will take place, according to his current schedule, on Monday overnight into Tuesday in Mississippi and Florida. Today, Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise, talking with MSNBC, says he can't figure out why the federal government continues to defer to BP on virtually every issue.
Why is BP in charge of all of these areas of the recovery? The federal government says and is supposed to be in charge of this, and yet every time you've got questions and problems, they just direct you to BP. And so they're trying to have this circular game of nobody's responsible when things go wrong, and that's got to change. We need a real command structure and a chain of command so people can be held accountable. And every time something goes wrong, they just point to BP.
Senator David Vitter holds that same position about the need for a clear chain of command with so many different bureaucratic agencies down on the Gulf, but nobody really sure who reports to who. For my full interview with Senator Vitter, which not only talks about the chain of command, but also the latest efforts to protect wildlife and the sensitive ecosystem along the Gulf Coast, head to worldnetdaily.com or dateline.radioamerica.org. In that same conversation with MSNBC, Congressman Scalise says President Obama is abandoning responsibility. The disaster might not be his fault, but it is his responsibility to clean it up.
And look, we know BP's the one who caused this disaster, and they've got the responsibility to pay for it. But under the federal law, the Oil Pollution Act, the president is the one responsible for mitigating the disaster. And he just seems to be ceding power all the time to BP. And that's got to change. It should have changed over a month ago.
And that's a look at Wednesday's headlines. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.